Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Cohance Lifesciences Limited Q1 FY26 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on a touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Cyndrella Carvalho from Cohance Lifesciences Limited. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Yusuf. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us today for Cohance Lifesciences Q1 FY26 earnings call. This marks our first full quarter operating as a unified platform under the Cohance identity. Following the formal integration of our acquired entities and rebranding earlier this year, we appreciate your continued interest and support as we begin this next chapter of growth and execution. Joining me on the call today are Mr. Vivek Sharma, Executive Chairman, Dr. Prasada Raju, Managing Director, Mr. Himanshu Agarwal, Chief Financial Officer. Let me now invite Vivek to share a strategic overview for the quarter.
Thank you, Cyndrella, and good evening to all. Q1 FY26 has been an important start to the year, not only from an execution standpoint but also in strengthening the foundation we have put in place over the past 12 months. This was our first full quarter as Cohance Lifesciences, and I'm pleased to share that the transition has been on track both internally and externally, with increasing alignment across teams, customers, and platforms. We remain focused on our core identity as a technology-led global CDMO anchored in scientific partnership, speed, and reliability. Our three-pillar structure, pharma CDMO, specialty chemicals, and API Plus, continues to provide a resilient foundation for growth. In line with evolving global sourcing strategies, we are seeing continued inflows of RFQ, reflecting both China Plus One and EU Plus One diversification trends. During the quarter, we responded to a healthy set of RFPs under this theme, particularly in HP APIs, small molecules. These requests are coming from established customers, expanding the scope of engagement further, and reinforces our positioning as a dependable CDMO partner for innovators looking to build supply security. Among our many ongoing customer engagements, our recent visit to Japan stands out as a key highlight. We strengthened our long-standing partnership with a leading innovator in ADC payloads, with discussions progressing towards broader strategic collaboration. We are also growing traction with other Japanese innovators across niche modalities, including oligonucleotides, small molecules, and our agrochemical and specialty chemical segments. During the quarter, we saw encouraging momentum across our CDMO business, particularly in lateral engagements and differentiated modalities such as ADCs and oligonucleotides. Our capabilities in payload linker synthesis and bioconjugation continue to resonate strongly with global innovators. At NJ Bio, our U.S.-based subsidiary, we received a significant new order from an existing customer for full ADC supply in early-phase payload linker synthesis to bioconjugation work. To support this and to meet future demand, we have commenced expansion of a dedicated cGMP suite in bioconjugation at the Princeton facility by committing an investment of $10 million. This will significantly enhance our capacity, enabling supply of full ADCs to clinical studies. We are pleased to share that our first adjacent payload program is under discussion, further strengthening our position in the ADC payload market, where our two leading payload categories together account for nearly 80% of current R&D pipeline programs. Our cGMP oligonucleotide building block facility at Nacharam, backed by a 230 million INR investment, is progressing on schedule and is expected to be fully operational by the end of CY25. Early-stage engagements with innovator partners are advancing well, with plant audits anticipated over the coming quarters. To summarize, excluding the temporary impact of inventory destocking, our pharma CDMO segment delivered over 30% year-over-year growth, supported by robust demand across key customer programs in high-value modalities. Our niche technology revenue share has risen from the high teens in FY25 to above 20% in Q1 FY26 and is on track to approach the mid-20s by the end of FY26. This segment delivered growth well ahead of the broader pharma CDMO business, excluding inventory destocking, underscoring our differentiated capabilities and strong execution in complex modalities. We secured another US FDA approval from our partner program, leveraging priority review and breakthrough therapy designation to fast-track its market entry. Two additional products from our small molecule portfolio are expected to transition to commercial stage over the next 12 to 18 months. We are also awaiting responses from existing customers on pending lateral RFPs, which could translate into additional opportunities in commercial products. During the quarter, we secured a lifecycle management supply mandate from a leading global innovator for a branded product API, underscoring our position as an integrated CDMO partner of choice. I would like to also take a moment to reflect on the broader organizational evolution underway at Cohance. As part of our strategic journey to build a best-in-class, innovation-led global CDMO, we are pleased to announce the formation of the Cohance External Advisory Board. We have inducted five highly respected industry stalwarts into the External Advisory Board, each bringing decades of leadership experience across R&D, CMC, commercial, and supply chain roles at leading global innovator companies. Their diverse perspectives and deep domain expertise will meaningfully shape our strategic direction and customer partnerships as we scale. The External Advisory Board, EAB as we call it, will function as an independent panel of experts providing strategic counsel to Cohance leadership on innovation, customer-centric growth, and operational excellence. This initiative reinforces our commitment to long-term value creation and deep collaboration with global innovators aligned with our vision to reach $1 billion USD by 2030. Dr. Sudhir Singh, who was running the CDMO business, has decided to step back from active executive responsibilities. And on behalf of the board and entire Cohance team, I would like to extend our sincere appreciation to Dr. Sudhir Singh for his foundational contributions to building our CDMO platform and positioning it for sustained growth and global relevance. We wish him continued success in his future endeavors. Sudhir will closely work with this a seamless transition. With our ambition to build a global technology-led CDMO from India, we have appointed Mr. Jan D. Herb as CEO of our CDMO business, a strategic leadership move aligned with our global growth agenda. Jan brings over three decades of experience, including nearly 15 years in senior CDMO roles, and has built trusted relationships with leading innovators across US, EU, and Asia. His presence in the US, together with our expanding global leadership team, enhances our ability to operate as a unified platform. In parallel, we continue to strengthen our CDMO leadership, deepen our techno-commercial expertise, and expand modality-specific capabilities to stay ahead of evolving customer needs while scaling with agility, quality, and speed. With that, I would now like to invite Dr. Prasada to take you through the segment performance and key operational updates. Dr. Prasada.
Thank you, Vivek. Good evening to everyone. Q1 FY26 has progressed across our businesses in line with our expectations. We continue to strengthen our key customer engagements and advance our platform readiness in high-growth modalities, positioning ourselves well for the future. Across these technology platforms, we are now working with more than 19 global innovators, including our NJ Bio and Sapala customer network. Regarding pharma CDMO, late phase activity and differentiated programs continue to drive scale-up traction is there. We signed several new CDAs and master service agreements by adding top 4 large innovator customers across the platform, apart from a few mid and small biotech companies, which indicates growing confidence from global innovators in our integrated model. I am happy to share with you some of the prominent wins and key developments across the business lines. As shared by our chairman Vivek, we have secured a lifecycle management opportunity from a leading innovator for a branded product API. Despite its long-term sustainable and margin accretive nature, this collaboration has immense potential to scale up in the years to come. We have been chosen as a high potent project which needs OEB4 infrastructure by a global innovator, validating our infrastructure and regulatory maturity. Commercial contracts for intermediates are under discussion with a large innovator customer under EU plus one sourcing strategy. The continued ramp up of payload linker program across both in-house and partnered platforms. Our ADC platform continues to gain momentum across both payload and bioconjugation modalities. At our Nacharam facility, we also have finalized designs for addition of a new containment which is capable of demonstrating industry hygiene studies up to OEB6 levels to support a customized payload program for a large US-based innovator. This expands alliance with our increasing flexibility for growing demands of development, commercial supply quantities under this engagement. It reinforces our high potency competencies from a global regulatory approved site in India. We are also deepening our engagements with 3 additional large innovator companies beyond 2 ongoing commercial programs, reflecting a unique value proposition, sustained trust in our payload linker capabilities as an integrated global player. Cohance's first program in the adjacent payload family is under discussion, expanding our payload portfolio and strengthening our position across payload linker and bioconjugation workflows. In parallel, we continue to engage with both existing and new customers, seeing growing interest in RFQs received for payload linker synthesis. These partners are also actively evaluating our Indian-based linker manufacturing capability along with our Princeton-based bioconjugation suite, predominantly as a part of their long-term supply chain strategy. We are expanding our offerings into next-generation modalities, such as pegylated antibody conjugates, sRNA conjugates, and antibody oligonucleotide conjugates, which are evolving space in the antibody drug conjugates. Our ongoing development of versatile payload linker program for ADC supports these capabilities. We continue to invest in scientific talent, compliance systems, and capacities, enabling us to deliver strong repeat business and deepen strategic collaboration with leading ADC innovators. We have announced INR 230 million for GMP oligonucleotide block at Nacharam facility. As we explained in our last con call, it is expected to be fully commercial by end of CY FY25-26. This leverages our expertise in modified nucleosides, log nucleic acid to scale up these chemistries from R&D to commercial manufacturing with up to multiple 100 kilo slots in a fit-to-purpose GMP facility. Overall, project implementation is progressing as planned and the qualification is near completion. It's important to notify the early customer interest remains robust and the platform will be a vital to our future modality mix. Coming back to specialty chemical segment, as we have alluded during our last call, customer engagement remained very positive. The Ag-Chem business continues to have improving sequential recovery, and the visibility is in line with our communicated expectations. Performance chemicals shipments are expected to ramp up in the latter part of the year. Overall, we remain confident of delivering full year growth targets. We are also now focused on adding two more customers in this segment while we deepen our existing relationship with a large innovator company. Regarding API Plus and FDA business, it has delivered a strong performance backed up by a deeper business fundamentals, scaling up of existing product portfolio, and a healthy pipeline that by securing orders in hand. We have validated two new products in API and are also on track for 7 to 8 new product validations and subsequent regulatory filings. Commercialization efforts of formulation projects are delivering expected results. With this, let me now hand over it to our CFO Himanshu for the financial overview. Thank you, and over to you, Himanshu.
Thank you, Dr. Prasada, and good evening to all. Our Q1 FY26 performance is in line with our expectations and the trajectory we had outlined earlier. As always, we encourage you to evaluate our performance on a full year basis, as quarterly trends may not fully reflect the underlying momentum of the business. Let me walk you through our Q1 financial year performance. We reported a revenue of 13% growth year on year. Q1 FY26, led by performance in specialty business API. Excluding the inventory destocking in pharma CDMO, the revenue growth for the quarter exceeded 25%. While revenue recognition was back-ended this quarter due to shipment timing and inventory destocking, operating indicators remained healthy and aligned with our expectations. The pharma CDMO segment posted a year-on-year 1% revenue growth in Q1 FY26. However, adjusting for the inventory destocking in the commercial products which we had outlined earlier, the segment delivered ahead of a 30% plus growth, driven by robust demand across key programs and high-value modalities. We also want to highlight that our niche technology revenue share has advanced from a mid-teens revenue share in FY25 to above 20% in Q1 FY26. And is well on track to approach a mid-20s shares by FY26. Growth in this segment was well ahead of the pharma CDMO business, reflecting scale-up in ADC and oligonucleotides. We expect this segment to be a meaningful driver of our growth trajectory as the bioconjugation capacity expansion in Princeton, the cGMP oligonucleotide building block facility at Nacharam, and the customized payload linker synthesis ramp-up in the US and India together in the coming fiscal years will deliver significantly higher margins. The adjusted EBITDA margins reflect ongoing investment ahead of scale and the integration of recently acquired high-tech growth assets. During the quarter, we invested ₹559 million in capex, primarily towards capacity expansion in NGBio, final stage validation in Nacharam Oligo Suites, as well as debottling across core manufacturing platforms. We also generated ₹2.3 billion in free cash flow. We ended the quarter with a healthy cash balance of ₹4.4 billion on our books, underscoring our disciplined approach to capital allocation and operational execution. We continue to maintain a healthy balance sheet, and our capital allocation remains sharply focused on scaling differentiated platforms, enhancing modality readiness, and capturing operating leverage over the medium term. We reiterate our FY26 guidance, and we continue to maintain a long-term guidance of reaching 1 billion INR 85 billion in 2030. As we scale up further, our medium-term plans to achieve mid-30s EBITDA margins remain intact. In closing, Q1 has indeed laid the groundwork for the rest of FY26 and beyond. We remain focused on delivery execution excellence, scaling differentiated platforms like ADC, oligos, and strengthening our position as a trusted global CDMO partner. With that, I hand it over to Cinderella.
Thank you, Himanshu. With that growth-focused mindset, we are happy to open the floor for questions. Yusuf?
Thank you very much. Yes. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. First question is from the line of Avnish Burman from Vicaria. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for taking my question. My question is specifically on the pharma CDMO side. The APIs that you would be making for innovator big pharma companies. I wanted to know whether you are exporting these APIs into facilities in the US, or are they majorly being exported into some European countries like Ireland and the formulation is happening there? So which is the major export country for your APIs under the pharma CDMO?
Avnish, thanks for your question. Major portion of this is going to Europe.
Okay. My understanding is, this is regarding the tariff. My understanding is that APIs do not come under the definition of pharmaceutical as defined by Section 232 investigations. Is this understanding correct that APIs that are being imported into the US are getting tariffed as of now?
So listen, we don't make APIs, we do intermediates, and they are, you know, they are right now not part of the tariffs that are being talked about. As far as we are aware, pharma is exempt, and right now we are exempt from any tariff discussion.
Okay, so right now whatever intermediates you are producing, you are exempt, but the exemption is, are you exporting any of these intermediates into US, or is everything going into Europe?
Predominantly Europe, Amish.
Okay. Just one more question. This is a hypothetical one. Let's see, tomorrow something comes out of the Section 232 investigation and, you know, there is a tariff number that is being suggested. Is there an agreement or an understanding on how will it get passed on in the supply chain, whether your customer will bear it or whether you will have to bear a part of it? Is there some color on that?
Avnish, this is Himanshu. So most of our current agreements with the customers are on FOB basis. We do not have the liability to pay the tariff when the goods reach the shore of US. So hopefully that addresses the query that you have on the hypothetical question if pharma were to get tariff.
It does, Manshu. Thank you so much. I'll get back in the queue. Thank you.
Thank you. Participants, if you wish to join the question queue, you may press star and one. Ladies and gentlemen, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. Next question is from the line of Dhaval Kut from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. I wanted to know, you know, we have been investing...
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Dhaval, your voice is very low. Request you to please speak a little louder.
Yeah, hi. We have been investing into building teams and building talent. So wanted to know what is our current BD team strength, especially overseas, and where are these teams located? And what is the future plan? Do we still see a lot of aggressive hiring within these teams? That's the first question. Proceeding to my second question.
Yeah. Can I answer that?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, Dhaval, thanks for your question. So, yes, you're right. We've been investing in front-end capabilities, you know, in all three major markets, US, Europe, and Japan, Southeast Asia. So, today, we have, in the North America, we have 4 BDs. These are all experienced CDMOs. Several of them are PhDs that we have hired in the last 9 months or so. They are based in East Coast and West Coast. We also have added a resource, a very experienced ex-pharma executive in Europe, as well as one very seasoned executive to the Japanese market. Now, in addition to that, NJ Bio, you know, also comes with its BD capabilities. So we have ADC specialists, and they have 2 BD resources, actually, that are focused on ADCs. We also have Sapala has resources. So they have a few resources in Japan as well as one resource based in India that travels. So combination of all of them is about 10 resources, 11 resources that are really helping us build brand and then growing, you know, customer relationship and then integrating with customers.
You think we are, you know,
I just wanted to clarify, this is the CDMO business, right?
Yeah.
In addition to that, API Plus has its own separate, specialty chem has its own separate team.
You think we have the right team sizes, or you think there is some room to augment it further on the CDMO side?
Yeah, so listen, I mean, we are also, it's not about a quantity, I think it's the quality of people that we focus on. So, and I think US, what we will, you know, we will announce some more people, I think, as time progresses, to really add to people with some unique experiences as well as unique, you know, capabilities. But I'm actually very excited about this customer advisory board that we have really engaged with. These are very experienced people. So with the combination of customer advisory board, our BD team, and with Jan coming in, and several of us really putting a lot of time on front end, I'm very excited, I think, with the teams that we have. And, you know, this is a process of evolution. You know, we may add one or two resources here and there, but we are not looking for major expansion in the quantity of teams. You know, we may add one or two people if required, but there's no major expansion plans there. There's a lot to be done with the team that we have. And we are excited, I think, with the potential. CPHI is coming. We're already blocking our calendars. A lot of meetings are lined up. Other events are coming. This comes back in the U.S. in a few weeks. So the team is really excited. There's a lot of effort going on with the existing team. If we feel the need, we'd be happy to bring some specialist people, you know, to help us accelerate the growth.
Understood. Very helpful.
Dhaval, does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. It was helpful. Secondly, you know, there are many payloads where, you know, our payloads are going to other global CDMOs. So in those cases, does the end innovator know where is the payload coming from, or is it completely at the discretion of the global CDMO where the payload and linker is coming? Or, you know, the innovator is just informed about it, but again, the final decision is with the CDMO, or is it the other way where the innovator mandates the CDMO to use payloads from certain, you know, manufacturer? How does that supply chain and decision making work?
So, Dhaval, that's a very good question. Final decision is fully with the innovator, and innovator is fully aware and is part of the decision making process on selection of the products that we supply. And our product is a key part of the end-to-end supply chain that is required for the end molecule that the customer is presenting. You know, as recent as just a few months ago, I personally met the end customer, the final you know, customer. So yes, they are fully aware, and they're fully integrated, and they're fully aware, and they're fully involved with us in the decision-making process and the future plans for that product and the other product they might want to launch that requires that material or that similar material.
Got it. One last bit. As a firm, do you think mAb manufacturing or antibody manufacturing looks an area that we would like to explore if any, you know, inorganic opportunity comes up or whatever, you know, even trying to build it organically, or you want to focus within the, you know, peptide/small molecule space and other, you know, key chemistries which are highlighted within the PPT?
Yeah, Dhaval, I mean, listen, our, we are a customer-centric organization. Our focus is to grow with customer and invest with customers. Even the investments we have announced are very customer-focused in terms of where the customer needs it and where customer is growing. Our discussions with customers have reflected that they want to control the mass supply. They have enough resources. They want to do it themselves. We haven't seen, from our perspective, the lens that we go with, we haven't seen much need and desire actually for customer to really partner with us on that space, you know, the customers that we work with. And in the capabilities that we have invested in, you know, whether it's the small molecule CDMO, or whether it's oligo or the ADC, we see a lot of potential to really grow, a lot of pipeline discussions, a lot of early-stage discussions that can move to advanced stages. So we want to remain focused in ADC in those spaces and then penetrate deep and extend our relationship with customers. Right now, we're not looking at any mass capabilities to acquire and invest in.
Okay, thank you. I have a few more questions. I'll probably join the queue.
Thank you. Participants, to join the question queue, you may press star and one. Next question is from the line of Harith Ahamed from Avendus Spark. Please go ahead.
Good evening. Thanks for the opportunity. My first question is on the destocking, which you alluded to. Is this specific to a particular product or one or two products, or are you referring to a destocking situation which is more general across the portfolio?
So, Harith, this is Himanshu. So the destocking that you referred to is specific to few products. It's actually, I think we had mentioned it earlier as well. It's mentioned to, it's related to two large commercial molecules that we are experiencing the destocking right now.
Got it. And the second one is on this new expansion that you've announced at Nacharam facility for oligonucleotides. So just trying to understand how exactly this expansion enhances our offering on the oligo side. You know, what exactly are we capable of supplying now versus what will be our enhanced capability going forward post the expansion?
Harith, Prasad here. Our starting point of oligo is predominantly research-driven, and the important requirement for us is to abilities to have cGMP capabilities. That's where we have started looking at it. We also have mapped what could be the potential subsegment of these modalities where needs immediate scale-up based on the customer interest, and we have figured out nucleosides is one modality subsegment they are looking for, log nucleic acid. Not many companies in the world can actually make it to the extent of purity what we make. These are all the few decision drivers which have actually triggered for creating a GMP capability. And we are pretty sure with the customer interest what we have received, we should definitely be able to expand our R&D capability to a cGMP level of manufacturing. After then, there is also a logical extension, and we have clearly laid down our internal thinking process as well. This is the first step of our business progression. And once we lock in some of the customers, we also have a further capacity expansion to make the final oligonucleotide at scale. So this is the broad plan that we have, which cannot happen unless you have a multi-kilo level cGMP manufacturing capability. Last but not least, it's also important to understand these capabilities have to exist in a regulatory approved plant. This particular block is coming in a US FDA approved site. So which gives the comfort for the innovative companies to come and qualify us. I hope this answers your question, Harith.
Yes, sir. That's helpful. And then the last one is on the expansion at NJ Bio. So your release talks about, you know, post this expansion, supplying phase 1-2 clinical quantities. But when I look at our payload capabilities, we already supply commercial at commercial scale. So now how should we think about our, you know, further enhancing our bioconjugation capabilities to, you know, commercial scale?
So Harith, you know, at NJ Bio, as we move, so we are adding capacity on conjugation suites. As part of acquisition of NJ Bio, we also have facility available very close to Princeton and NJ Bio, which can be converted at a very fast pace to build commercial capability. We have, and as customer progresses, as I said, we are investing behind customer. As customer makes progress on the molecules that they go, we can convert that facility. It's actually a semi-built facility that is already ready in a pharma park with a lot of basic infrastructure. So the time to make this existing site to a commercial is very fast. However, we are investing where the customer needed, and with this customer that we are working and the others that we are talking to, as the molecule progresses from the stage that we are working, if you see the need, we have plans ready that we can very quickly expand into commercial capability and then, you know, work accordingly. Right now, our focus is to really finish this site quickly and then take the molecules forward and deliver on what we had and then see the readouts and then accordingly invest capital behind customer growth.
Understood, sir. Thanks for taking my questions.
Thank you.
Next question is from the line of Shyam Srinivasan from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening. Thank you for taking my question. I'm on the road, so just bear with some background noise. But just one question was on the 1Q performance and relative to what the fiscal 26 outlook is. Sir, margins have come in lower, and even if you adjust for the one-off expenses, 23-24%, we have guided for a low 30% kind of margin. So what gives us the confidence? You also mentioned about this, you know, destocking. I presume it's in CDMO, sorry, I missed some of your opening comments, but just want to understand how should the rest of the quarters pan out and what gives us the confidence of the guidance for fiscal 26 remains intact.
Ram, so this is Himanshu. As mentioned during the call, we have reiterated our guidance both for FY26 and more importantly for the FY30 or $2,030.1 billion. So we remain committed to delivering the $1 billion or 85 billion INR in 2030. If you notice, we've kind of carved out the impact of the destocking molecules, and as we know, that CDMO business has these peaks and troughs, and we had called out that there are two commercial molecules where we are experiencing destocking. If you isolate that and if you peel the onion, you realize that pharma CDMO has grown at around 30%, and all the three engines are actually firing. Because you look at spec chem, it's growing at 28%, API is growing at 90%. So while we have always maintained that this is a business which we should not look at quarter to quarter, and that's what I will stay firm with you as well. We should not interpret anything from a quarter to quarter business. I think the most important thing that we've also called out during the quarter is the contribution coming from the niche technologies. And we have mentioned that the niche technology share of the total revenue has steadily grown from mid-teens in last year to early 20s, and we are expecting it to be mid-20s as we end FY26. I think that should also give us confidence of how the niche technologies, which is where we are building a platform, and we are calling that out very categorically for 2030, is growing. So I believe that we remain firm on our 2030 guidance of $1 billion as well as mid EBITDA, which we have called out.
Manshu, thank you for that, but I was more looking at 26 only. So if you could just rehash and tell us what the current year guidance only is. Because maybe there are some confusion on the previous call. So what are we calling for organic growth for fiscal 26 full year? And what is the margin levels that we're expecting for full year fiscal 26?
So Shyam, I think it's important, and I think thank you for this question because it helps me clarify our position very clearly. So see, for us, the organic and inorganic are two sides of the same coin. Okay? It's about capital allocation. And I think what we as an organization, we do believe we have created this platform in the last five and a half years based on a mix of organic and inorganic. So that's the way we have been, and we do believe that we have the secret sauce of integrating, first finding out, leveraging those assets, buying them, and then integrating to create a niche technology platform. That's what we've been doing. So for us, inorganic growth is a core part of our thesis, and you will see that we continue to add value-accretive, high-quality businesses. I think we should consider this as an appropriate use of our capital to acquire capabilities, geographical presences, as well as customer, versus other organic model of doing capex and building the same over a longer period of time. For us, inorganic is a way to scale up business, and ultimately, the investment in capex will yield the right results for us. So I would urge you guys to kind of think about it in the way we look at and not separating it as an organic or inorganic. It's just a capital allocation philosophy. And maybe our philosophy may be slightly different in the way we run our business.
Thank you, Manchal. I'm not got the answer, but I'll take it offline.
Thank you. Before we move to the next question, a reminder to the participants to ask a question, you may press star and one. Next question is from the line of Abdul Qadir Puranwala from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir. Thank you for the opportunity. So my first question is with regards to your opening remarks on, you know, your interaction with the Japanese customer. So where are we in this discussion now, and, you know, do we have any visibility of certain onboarding of certain clients or certain new projects coming in the near term? Hello, was I audible?
Yeah, thank you. No, you were audible. Thank you so much for your question. So listen, our relationship is very strong. We are heavily committed to that part of the world. We have a full-time, very experienced, dedicated resource just for the CDMO business in addition to the oligo resources and actually all different parts of the businesses that we have, all three engines. Actually, that's a very unique thing. CDMO, API, specialty chem, ADC, and oligo. All five of them are seeing traction from Japan area. This recent trip that I did, we met with a lot of existing customers and a lot of new customers, along with actually Dr. Naresh Chen also. We met with some very large innovators and had very exciting meetings. Happy to share Dr. Naresh Chen is actually going back again because customers want to see him and discuss some important things. So in addition to existing relationship, we have actually onboarded a new customer, which I talked about in my opening remark. It is also from Japan on a CDMO. That's a commercial molecule that transfer is going on, that is scaling, and we expect it to reach its full potential, at least based on our projection, the next year and a half time frame, right? So that's happening. On its back cam, actually, we have onboarded a Japanese customer last quarter, and we are doing very early phase work with them, and that's looking very, very promising. So we have multiple relationships with Japan. We continue to invest time, and I am personally committed to see a lot of growth coming from that area. The relationship with customers is very strong, and we are excited, I think, with the potential with existing products with same customers, with new products with the same customers, and the new customer pipeline that we are developing in that area.
Got it, sir. And so just one more on your API business. So, you know, how does this, you know, fit into the entire scheme of things when, you know, we are approaching innovators and at the same time we have this generic business? So, I mean, what is the perception that the innovators would have, you know, when we are into a generic kind of a business for our business model?
I'll let Dr. Prasad answer that. I have my own views, but let Dr. Prasad answer. I'll be happy to
hear. Thank you for this question. To clarify ourselves, the very fact that we have defined our thesis for API Plus is not to compete with the innovative companies on paragraph 4 filings. It is more of a matured product with a deeper cost leadership position by securing global capacity where we can gain a market leadership position. Those are all the products that we always play. On the contrary, you must have followed our commentary in the early part of our con call where we mentioned one of the branded products was qualified by the innovator company which API belongs to them. So what it implies is we become a lifecycle management solution providers for the innovator companies for their matured molecules. In fact, it actually complements our strategy of CDMO by complementing our overall skill set about API. As you understand, the skill set and the regulatory environment that is required for making intermediate to API is completely different. So we have that unique competency, and that complements and propels the growth of both the engines of CDMO as well as API Plus. Vivek, you want to add something?
Then I think you complemented. So we are seeing good traction as well. Just in addition to the one that Dr. Prasada talked, I actually had a discussion with a different customer recently, and they were looking at different businesses, and when they looked at our products, they were very excited, and they immediately start inquiring about two APIs that we do because they are securing it from a very high cost area, and the immediate inquiry was, can we work with you guys? So I personally see it's very complementary. It's helping our customers and the innovators actually optimize their costs, accelerate their speed, and then even have alternate sources in certain places.
Got it. And so one final one, if I may. So your capacity expansion at NJ and Sapala, so when does that come on board? And, you know, when you talk about the niche specialties, you know, scaling up to, say, 25%, is that going to be driven by the new capacities what you're building up?
So the expansion of oligo site at our Nacharam site is actually in late stages of construction. We expect validation and other things to happen next quarter. And I think by the end of this calendar year, we should have it live. We are actually already having some active discussions with customers to really bring some products there. ADC site, the work has already started. The timeline for that could be early calendar next year, somewhere that time frame. A lot depends on, I think, some of the other factors there, but we are aggressively pursuing and trying to push the contractors to finish it before the end of fiscal year. So we should see some traction this year. Our hope is that, you know, on both of them, we are having active discussions. We should see sign up some contracts, but next year we'll see a full-fledged impact of those sites.
Understood, sir. Thank you for answering my questions.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Chirag Shah from White Pine Investments Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So the first question I have is this one-time expenses that we have, when can we expect them to not appear in P&L? Because the way I look at it is the more we do M&A, more this one-time will keep on coming. So if you can throw some light on this one-time expenses that you classify, is this the last year, assuming there are no further M&A, or is this the last quarter? So that's one, because that's a significant part of our EBITDA bridge. That's why I'm asking.
So Chirag, Himanshu this side. So for us, what we do is we classify the non-operating related expenditure into the one-time expenses. Okay. So, I mean, the nature of business is such that we have an employee ESOPs, and that we categorize as one-time expenses, or these appear as whatever you wish to call them. These are the adjustments that appear there. Right? For us, in the current quarter, we've also incurred certain professional and legal services which is associated with talent acquisition and contractual compliances. Now, these are actually part of our ongoing commitment to secure top talent and protecting companies' intellectual property as well as competitive positions. In auditor's view, this was considered as a one-time expenses and it was classified as such. So that's what they are pertaining to this quarter. I think it's very difficult for me to answer a question about when they can disappear. I mean, I would be as interested as you that they disappear. But that's the current nature of the business.
Because in 24, we had a reasonable amount. In 25, we had a reasonable amount of one time. And your EBITDA bridge really changes simply because of this number. I understand Forex is a different thing altogether, and I appreciate that. So that's one. Second question is just again coming back to F26 outlook. The way to look at this is there has to be a significant ramp up in H2 CDMO for us to have a 30% kind of margins, given the way the Q1 has played out. Is this the right understanding or assumption? For us to be closer to 30% margin, H2 has to be a significant ramp up in pharma CDMO. And a related question is, this 30% adjusted growth in pharma CDMO you called out, any indication from customer by when this inventory destocking will get over or at what stage they are? Because that...
So, Chirag, I think 2 points. One, we have reiterated our guidance for FY26. Number two, we have commented that we are a long-term business. We are investing in the business to deliver a $1 billion by 2030 and mid-30s EBITDA. I think that's the guidance we would want you to look into and consider.
No, fair point.
As far as destocking is concerned, allow me to finish my second part of your question.
Yeah.
As far as destocking of the commercial molecules is concerned, we had mentioned that it is a year phenomenon. At quarter one, it is very difficult for the customer to share any appreciation more than what they have shared at this stage.
Okay, fair point. Yeah. This is helpful. This is appreciated. Okay, thank you very much and all the best.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Vivek Agarwal from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the question. In the opening opening comments, you talked about an API of branded products, right? It would be helpful if you can throw some more light on what kind of the product it is, so what's the overall market size at innovator level, and when you can commercialize this product.
Repeat the question.
Vivek, can you please repeat the question?
Yeah, so the question is related to API supply contract that you got for a branded product. You have mentioned in the opening remarks. So just want to understand what kind of the product it is and what is the overall market size of that product at an innovator level? And from your end, when you can commercialize that product? Thank you.
Thank you for the question. It's a commercial product for us, and we are not making for customers. Based on our experience of making this product with long-term stability and our proven track record, customers actually qualified us, which enables us to increase our market share from what it is now to a substantial level. At this stage, we can share up to this extent. We will definitely be the dominant market player for this particular product with this new addition of the innovator as a liability management solution. We can be one of the largest in the globe for this molecule.
Okay, so this product is already commercialized by the innovator in the market, actually.
So already commercial for the innovators, and they have been sourcing from one of the European counterpart. Because of their strategic change, they are looking for a long-term sustainable partner outside of Europe. That's how it's a long process. It took almost 6 quarters time to reach the stage what we are talking about. Otherwise, it's a fully commercial product for the innovator under their own brand.
Understood. And what would be the overall market size of the product at an innovator level?
It's difficult to put that number attached to it right now.
No problem at all. Just one more question around this destocking. It's quite common in the CDMO business side. So is it possible for you to highlight what is the reason for the destocking by the innovator, and is it possible you can see some kind of a ramp up in the coming quarters from this, from these couple of molecules?
Vivek, I think it's a customer specific point which is there. I'm assuming that it would be a function of many subjects, including inventory management and the commercial demand from their side.
Understood. So for these two products, whatever the supplies that you made in this particular quarter, so these are likely to remain more or less similar for the rest of the year. Is it the right way to look at?
Sorry, Vivek, your voice is not clear for us. Could you please repeat the question?
No problem. I will take it from Sindhara later. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Dhaval Kut from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. So on the 2030 guidance, which is $1 billion, how much you think, you know, the current platform can get you up to? Very, very, very ballpark, because let's say, you know, in fiscal 25, we were at almost 335 million and we need to reach $1 billion. So that's almost cap of 660 million. So how much of this delta can the current platform bridge? Very, very, I won't hold on to those numbers because I know it's early days, but you think like, you know, 80-90% of it is achievable by the current capability. You just need to invest into the capacities and maybe, you know, inch up on the capability curve. Or you think there are big missing gaps and the current platform can get maybe 50-60% of it, and there are other, you know, capability that you need to really get into the market, and post that you'll probably be able to get into the rest of the delta of this 2030 guidance.
Dhaval, honestly, you know, we could go for an hour on this particular subject. I mean, obviously for us as an organization, there is very deep work that has been done before we've articulated this. I'm genuinely struggling as to where to start and where to end the answer to this question. Let me give you a pointer, okay? One of the reasons we've called out the niche tech and the share of revenue is for the very reason for the investors to appreciate and understand how we've been investing behind niche tech and how that share of revenue is growing. If I mention what we have articulated, we were at mid-teens in FY25. We've increased the share of revenue to early 20s, and we're guiding to mid-20s in Nishchay. And if you look at some of the earlier material we have shared, Nishchay is slated to grow upwards of 22%-25% in the market, and we believe that we can get a dominant share there. So I would like to end it here because I think this is a subject where we could spend a lot of time working together on this and helping you relate to the entire strategic direction of the company.
Got it. And secondly, from a tariff standpoint, how does the math work on the spec chem, ag chem? Is it exposed to U.S., or you think, you know, the exposure to U.S. is extremely low and that's not really an area to be looked into?
So our supplies in ag chem are to LATAM, so we are not exposed to U.S. In the spec chem, on the OLED piece, our customer is specifically willing to pick up the tariff if and when the tariff were to get implemented. So we are not having an exposure on either of the two segments on the tariff side.
This is helpful. Just a few bit on the, you know, bookkeeping side. What was the reason for other income, and how do you see that going forward? And secondly, on ESOP charges, till what year do you expect them to hit our P&L? And what could be the ballpark quantum? Will it be sort of a static number next 2-3 years?
So ESOP charges is not a static number. I think it has been variable in FY25 versus 26. We've been, in all fairness, we've been waiting for completion of the merger. There will be further ESOPs which have to be granted, and hence the charge will increase on the ESOP.
Okay, so what kind of charge are we expecting for 26? Any expectation for 27 as well?
No, it's too early. I have to work with our HR colleagues. I don't have visibility to share with you at this stage. Please allow me some time.
Yeah, sure. No issue. And on the other income, how do we see that shaping up into next few quarters and for the year? Because from a QOQ standpoint, there is a significant fall. Was the payment for some of the acquisition done in 4Q, or is there something else? Is it PLI income, something else?
No. I think we need to... Okay, a majority part of the other income was the treasury-related income, which was invested when we acquired the assets of NJ Bio and Sapala. So that's what has led to the decline in the other income, apart from other minor elements of it.
Got it. So this is the sort of number that we can look forward to in next few quarters. Is that right understanding?
Well, you'll have to really excuse me for these kind of questions.
No problem.
Balance will determine the other income, right? And
yeah,
we are reporting healthy cash in the balance sheet.
No problem. Okay. And lastly, wanted to understand the math behind...
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Dhawal. We will take that as a last question due to time constraints, sir. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will take that as the last question for the day. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for the closing comments.
Thank you, everyone. We look forward to our next call. Thanks for your time and joining us.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, sir. On behalf of Cohance Life Sciences Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.